You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Your first choice for Southern sports.
Hi, I'm Mac McGee, and I don't know much, but I know one thing. Tommy DeVito and Will Levis are Monday Night Football legends.
Armchair.
Community Access Channel.
He's the armchair quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. The All-American man.
With a cool one in his head. Yeah, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Hope you are having an outstanding day as we get rocking and rolling in the world of sports. So it's been a minute since we have talked with all the Shohei Ohtani stuff that has gone on with the news breaking over the weekend. Obviously, that Shohei Ohtani has inked a deal, a $700 million deal, to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's deferring 680 of it. So in other words, he's going to get $2 million a year for the next several years. Now there's some confusion, and I wanted to go ahead and lay this out because people have gone back and forth and they don't really understand what's going on. They believe because it's the money that's actually going to go into his account. There were a lot of videos and whatnot that were circulating over the last day and a half that were saying that he was only going to get $2 million. The Dodgers would only be counted on $2 million for lack of a better term, we'll call it the salary cap, and that's simply not the case. What's going to be going down, and I've got a breakdown here of it. I still think it's a little messed up, and I still think that something needs to be done by the players' union across the board, because Ohtani deferring his $68 million of his $70 million per year, Dodgers' salary each year until the end of the contract. So it ends up being the Dodgers only having to pay $680 million of the $700 million for the next 10 years. But the AAV for what they call the CBT purposes will still be $46 million a year. And that was figured out by Fabian Ardaia. And he covers the Dodgers for The Athletic. And the short of it is, that's the number that the fans are going to be focusing on. I still think it's a little ridiculous. If you're paying a man $70 million a year on average, it's different if certain parts are going to hit at the end or whatnot. But all in all, you should be getting about $70 million per year hit on you. Instead, they've deferred it. But you're still going to get hit with $46 million a year on the CBT. So when you're looking at it from the competitive balance, that's what we're worried about as a fan. I still agree that if the guy's making $70 million a year, it should be hitting about $70 million a year on the CBT. So what is actually going to happen is that it's going to hit across it at about $46 million a year. There were different reports that got debunked, but the short of it is it's going to be about $46 million a year, okay? Going from that, what you have to look at, so you got the $46 million a year, but what's actually going to be coming out of the Dodgers' pocketbook is two. Now, where this is going to come to a head, and it's kind of interesting, if you remember the Mookie Betts deal from a few years back with the Dodgers, they have a lot of money deferred in that. And in about a decade, I believe they said 2033 is when this actually happens. The real money that's going to come out of the Dodgers bank account is going to collide with not just the Mookie Betts money, but also the Shohei Ohtani money. And evidently, at that point, when that money starts coming out, it's going to be north of $88 million per year just for those two players. They've probably got a way to get around it. And my point is this. I think the players' union is the one that has to step in and do something. Because the players' union has to be the one that puts the pressure not just on the players to do better as far as get their money when they're signing up for these contracts, but also you don't just want them getting their money and it coming out evenly across the board. But I still say 46, though it's high, it's not 70 on the CBT. And that adds up when you start talking about the different numbers that, and obviously they go up per year, but this year it's just north of 240 of when you start hitting the different taxes. And why that's a big deal with Major League Baseball is because when you start hitting the different numbers, last year I believe it was 237, 238. This year it's going to like 242. But each year the number will gradually go up, and we get that. But you're still getting a guy, when it's all said and done, is going to be getting $70 million a year, and that's why he signed with you. And the only $2 million is coming out of their actual pocketbook, 46, and 46 is coming out across the board on the CBT. It ought to be the $70 million. Now, I don't know how they kicked that can down the road 10 years from now. How the hell do you avoid that? I guess you have to find yet another guy, and yet another guy, and yet another guy that will continue to pull this game. Here's the other thing that I would like to know. This has got nothing to do with baseball. Well, one of the reasons why he's pulling this, playing this game and pulling this number, because people would, a lot of people would probably say, well, why the hell would he not want his money now? The game he's trying to play is when he is no longer living in the state of California at the end of this contract. He wants to start getting his money then. And the theory would be he would be living somewhere else, not in Los Angeles, California. Maybe he's retired and he's back in Japan. Maybe he's wherever. But if you are the state of California, are you not a little ticked off about this? Because I know they love their tax money. All states do, but California loves their tax money. They have the highest state income tax in all of the United States. So, how the hell are they letting this get away? So to me, that's the bigger question, and we'll continue to dig on this. But my biggest question of this entire thing would be, how in the world did we end up with the money coming out? And though, yes, it's still going to be 46, but it's still not 70. But then the other big picture, how in the world does the state of California allow this? Because evidently Mookie Betts is doing the same thing. I'm not sure about Freddie Freeman, although I do know that he's from California, so I don't believe his is spread out like that. But Mookie Betts is doing the same thing. Mookie Betts is from Tennessee. So let's just say at the end of Mookie Betts' contract, he ends up retiring, right? And he's getting his money. I don't really understand how he could be sitting in, let's say he decides to go buy a house in Nashville, Tennessee. And Tennessee right now does not have state income tax. Who knows if they will in 10 years, but not the point. Let's say Mookie Betts moves to Florida. Either he's retired or he's playing for the Rays or the Marlins or whatnot. How does money coming from the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are based in California, going to your bank account, not get affected by your state income tax in California? So that's something that someone who's a hell of a lot smarter is going to have to explain that to me, but I am going to continue to dig on that because it seems crooked. It almost seems like tax evasion, to be honest with you. And it damn sure does seem unfair, and it seems like that they're pulling a fast one. And Major League Baseball needs to step in and fix this. The Players Union needs to grow a spine and fix this. Because you can't allow a couple of players who are trying to reset the market pull this number, because then the next guy, whoever it is, who comes up for the big contract, and he goes, hey, I know he's a pitcher and a designated hitter, so he's going to get paid a little more, but he's getting paid $70 million a year. And we'll take Juan Soto, for example. I think I'm worth, we'll just pick a number, 45, 50, somewhere between 45 and 50, because Aaron Judge, who signed his contract last year, was a little south of that, right? So we'll just say it goes up just a little bit. I think I deserve 47 a year, right? What's stopping the teams that he is negotiating with, whether it's the Yankees or whoever, and says, yeah, we'll pay it to you, but we don't want to pay it to you all at once, so we're going to defer a whole hell of a lot of it, and you'll just have to deal. That, to me, is the real Ohtani effect, is that he is kind of screwing his next brother in making their... And look, most people would say, well, who cares? I can live off of $2 million a year, and I get that. But if that money is owed to you for services you have done, wouldn't you want to get that money into your hands and to be able to invest it? Whatever you want to do. Let's say you want to spend it like a drunken sailor. But let's say you want to take that money, invest it, and you don't want the money sitting in the Dodgers bank account. Because all they're doing is making money off the fact that they're not having to pay you money. So I don't think this is quite over, and it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I did want to address that because we had not talked since that news broke out in between the last show and this show. And it wasn't just the actual numbers that broke, but it was also all the different theories. Because I saw videos, and I'm sure you saw them too, on different outlets that were trying to break it down and saying that the Dodgers were only going to have, we're only on the hook for $2 million a year. Mainly, you know, basically saying they just added Ohtani to their roster and counting against their actual salary for 2024 is only going to be $2 million. That's not the case. It's going to be 46, which does raise their CBT, but at the same token, it ain't right. It ought to be 70. 68, 66, whatever. Normally, you'll get gradual over a 10-year period. You may not make 70 per the entire life of the contract, but typically, you would make somewhere, we'll say around 65, then the next year maybe 66, 67, and it goes up and goes up, and at some point, you're well north of 70 per year, and you eventually get to the 700 part. But to do two per year, and don't worry, Ohtani's going to be fine as far as money in his pocket. I get that part. All of his endorsements and whatnot, and he's going to be fine. But the point of the matter is the next guy who's not going to make the Ohtani type of endorsements, because he makes money from Japan, the United States, the whole nine yards. The next guy who goes, he is going to run into the agents and the general managers who want to finagle the next deal. And eventually this all comes to a head. Did you see, here's item number two. Did you see what's going on with, and this affects three major sports teams in the Northwest. But evidently, Seattle Mariners, the Kraken, and the Portland Trailblazers were all being broadcasted on the same television network. And their deals fell apart. It was a part of that whole Bally Sports thing that crumbled last year. There's a handful of teams that are running into this problem. Mainly the teams that are running into this problem, most of them don't have a lot of capital to begin with, and it's not affecting their spending as much, but this is going to definitely affect the Seattle Mariners. It's one of the reasons why you see them moving and making deals and why they sent Kelenic to Atlanta, et cetera, because they went from a guaranteed contract to now it's basically they're going to get a percentage off of the revenue that comes off of subscription services. So no longer do the Mariners, Kraken, and the Trailblazers have a flat rate that they're going to get every year. Instead, it's going to be a local subscription. I think I heard it was around $20 a month. And what's happened is a lot of the fans have turned it off. They've canceled their subscription. Now, there is a belief in the corners that come baseball season, there are going to be a lot of Mariner fans that are going to reappear, but they can't bank on that. And so one of the reasons why the money's going away instantly off that subscription is because the NBA is not as popular for streaming services. It just isn't. Most fans consume the game of the week, whatever it is on TNT or ESPN, but they're okay with missing their night in, night out broadcasts of whoever your favorite basketball team is. Same thing with the NHL. And right now, the Portland, we all know that the Kraken have been good, but the Portland Trailblazers are in a complete rebuild as they traded away Damian Lillard. So a lot of those fans said, why the hell am I paying for this? I don't want to watch this crap every night. So they traded away. It'll be interesting to see what kind of money comes in when they hit the baseball season. But what I have not seen, broken down is, and I guarantee you it's probably affected. I don't think the Mariners are going to get the percentage of revenue from April to the end of September, per se, right? It is most likely set up in a 12-month cycle. So when people are pulling the plug because they're like, I don't want to pay $20 a month to watch the crappy Trailblazers who are, you know, traded away their star, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not that into hockey. We'll wait till baseball season. But it's going to affect the Mariners until they get a new deal. So you're going to see the Mariners take a step back. You know, it took them a long time. Remember the drought was ended a couple of years ago? And they finally got off the schneid and got into the playoffs. And they missed out last season, but they still look like a team that was building for something. And now it looks like they're going to be taking a step back, which you hate to see, because it was a good young nucleus, and this could really be a crusher for Mariner fans, for Seattle baseball, if they don't get something worked out in the very near future. Royals were another team. The Braves are safe right now, but they do have now, the thing about the Braves is the Braves won out of their contract, and they're going to be looking forward to try to get the hell out of their contract, because it was such a bad deal that was signed by AOL 20-plus years ago. That's coming to an end here in a couple of seasons. But it's never good when you see this kind of thing happen, because it can have a domino effect throughout the league. So that's item number two. Want to jump into a little of the football going on, the NFL, we see that Justin Herbert is going to be done for the season. That is a that's a big blow, not only for the Chargers, who I believe are in a tailspin, and they're just kind of playing out the string here. There's no way that they don't go in a new direction by next year. But the other thing would be, you've got games of importance that the Chargers are going to be involved in the next few weeks. I mean, the Thursday night game, my God, is that going to be a disaster? Chargers and Raiders this week on Thursday night football. Woo! 5-8 versus 5-8, neither one of them have a real shot at making the playoffs. You would think that the Raiders will probably win that game, and the Raiders obviously benefit from this, but who does not benefit from this is the viewer. Nobody wants to sit there and watch that nonsense. So that's going to be a mess in itself. The Raiders, if you're wondering, okay, let's assume that the Raiders win this game, and they are at home against the Chargers. They then go to Kansas City, the Colts, and at home against Denver. I think best case scenario, and this is pie in the sky, is that the Raiders would finish winning three of their last four and finish with, what, 9 losses? I don't think that's going to get you into the playoffs. So it is a totally meaningless game on Thursday night as we look ahead to the weekend. We are going to take a look at some of these spreads here in a second. Just wanted to hit a little bit of the news and notes that's going on in the world of sports. Got a couple other things that are brewing. It looks like the Vikings will be starting Mullins at quarterback against the Bengals. And it'll probably be a game time decision with Justin Jefferson. You had Tyreek Hill of the Miami Dolphins, who retweaked his ankle injury the other night against the Titans. And he came out, I think, twice. Of course, came back in, and he came out the last time, I think, with about 3 minutes left in the game. And that is going to be a huge loss for the Dolphins if they cannot win. They host the Jets this week. We'll keep an eye on that. But Zach Wilson, man, I'll tell you what. Now, look, granted, it was against the Texans. Texas defense hasn't exactly been the 85 Bears this year. But it's still very, very interesting to see that they are going into Miami. If the Dolphins don't have Tyreek Hill, and this is on a short week too, so you got to take that into effect. If the Dolphins don't have Tyreek Hill, it's not that they can't beat the Jets, but they are not the same offense without Tyreek Hill. Without Tyreek Hill, they are much more run-heavy and less dynamic. And with that Jets defense, I think you can see a lot closer ball game than what we saw on the Black Friday game between the Jets and the Dolphins. The Dolphins also lose center Connor Williams to a torn ACL. The Miami Dolphins are really licking their wounds this week. And here's an interesting report as well. NBC plans to use Noah Eagle as the play-by-play voice for its number 2 NFL playoff broadcast crew, easy for me to say, in January, passing on one Al Michaels. And that, to me, is very interesting. They had the opportunity to put Al Michaels in the booth, and NBC is basically doing a changing of the guard. Now, the tandem of Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth will be the number one crew. But that's very interesting that Noah Eagle, 26 years old, is essentially dethroning Al Michaels. If you remember last year, Al Michaels did the game in the first round of the playoffs. I'm trying to remember what game he did. I almost want to say that it was the Jaguars versus the Chargers, but I could be wrong on that. But regardless, he did do the game last year, and Al Michaels, 79 years old, reportedly earns $1 million per game in an agreement with Amazon that affords him the opportunity to accept assignments from NBC. So I don't know if this means that he's not getting diddly squat from NBC and they're doing it as a penny-pinching move or not. And, oh, yeah, here it is. I did remember this correctly. Last year, it was Al Michaels and Tony Dungy that called the Jacksonville Jaguars Chargers game. So, what do you know? I do remember stuff sometimes. But I just found that interesting just from the broadcasting side of it. It's interesting that basically they said thanks, but no thanks. And a couple other things. Patrick Mahomes came back and said that he is regretful for his outburst after the game against Buffalo. He said, quote, obviously, you don't want to react that way. I mean, I care, man. I love it. I love this game, and I love my teammates, and I want to go out there and put everything on the line to win. But obviously, you can't do that. You can't be that way towards officials or really anybody in life. And then he added, more than anything, I regretted that I acted that way towards Josh Allen after the game because he had nothing to do with it. So it was kind of a backhanded, back-ass apology of the fact that he was blaming the referees for, if you missed it, Kadarius Toney lined up in the neutral zone. On that play, Kadarius Toney actually scored a touchdown on a lateral across, a backwards lateral across the field from a deep catch made by Travis Kelce, and he had a backwards lateral to Kadarius Toney that went for a score. Now, that had nothing to do with the execution of the play, but if you go back and watch the pre-snap, he was absolutely over the line. I'm trying to think of what show that is, but there was some show where they're arguing back and forth, and then the one guy goes, "You're so far over the line, you can't even see the line. The line is like a dot to you." And whatever show it is, it's something that I've seen many times because it's a Friends episode. Joey was if any of you Friends fans, Joey was saying it to Chandler because he had made a move on his girlfriend. So, but yeah, it's the same thing. Kadarius Toney was so far over the line, he couldn't even see the line. He was standing at the 49-yard line. The line of scrimmage was just past the 50. So there is no question whether or not it really dumbfounds you. What it came down to is this, and this just tells you how spoiled and twisted it is for Patrick Mahomes. He has always gotten the benefit of the doubt and a blind eye from the referee. And what he was upset with, he has yet to say that he thought Toney wasn't offsides, because he was. He was well offsides. He was upset because they called it, saying, "I've never had that called before." What that tells me is that, what the hell you mean you've never had it called before? That just tells me that they have always been bending the rules for the Kansas City Chiefs. And many fans have always thought this. And look, we know it's a TV show, and they bend the rules. Hell, how do you think Alabama ended up into the college football playoffs? The line is like a dot to the college football playoff committee. They bend the rules because they think that you're going to get much better viewership if you have the right teams advancing. It's a little different in the NFL because you actually have to win the games on the field, and it's not a popularity contest. It's not a homecoming vote. But it's still the same basic philosophy of they want Kansas City. They want Patrick Mahomes. It has nothing to do with the Chiefs. It's the fact that Patrick Mahomes is a huge star in the NFL, and just like Michael Jordan, who always got the benefit of the doubt, and I can mark many times where Michael Jordan got the favorable call in many series against the Celtics, against the Pistons, the Lakers, the Trailblazers, the Suns, the Jazz. My God, did the Jazz get robbed? But they were always bending the rule because they figured they wanted you. They at least wanted him to get to it, get to the title game. And it's the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that the NFL has to do that. I believe the NFL at this stage is Teflon. And it doesn't matter if Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are not in the Super Bowl. We are going to watch the Super Bowl because it is on. You know, that's another great line out of another great sitcom. The old Seinfeld reference where George and Jerry are sitting there saying that they're going to do a show about nothing. Goes, well, why am I watching it? And then they say, because it's on TV. And of course, the NBC executive says, not yet. But it's the point of the argument of, well, you're watching it because it's on. And that's what the NFL is. It does not matter. I'm trying to think of the worst possible scenario for the NFL in 2023. Teams of actual playoff hopes. The worst possible scenario for the NFL would be a Super Bowl. And I would say Jacksonville, but Jacksonville, even though it's not in a great television market, they still have the star power of Trevor Lawrence. So let's do one a little worse than that. Let's say it's the Indianapolis Colts with Gardner Minshew or the Bengals with Jake Browning, right? Let's say they sneak into the Super Bowl. And on the NFC side, you don't have one of your 49ers or Cowboys or Eagles. You don't even have like a heartwarming story like Baker Mayfield taking Tampa there or the Detroit Lions finally cracking through. Let's say it ends up being the Atlanta Falcons with Desmond Ridder or the New Orleans Saints with Derek Carr. I think the worst Super Bowl possible would be the Saints going head-to-head with the Cincinnati Bengals and Jake Browning, you know, no Joe Burrow. I'll even give you the Indianapolis Colts, either one. That would still be the most watched football game of the year because it's the Super Bowl. So the NFL doesn't have to do this. But they do. And you know how you know that they've bent the rules? Because Patrick Mahomes said he's never had that called on his offense before. You're trying to tell me you think that offense has never been offsides? And I know that there is an unwritten rule with the referees where the receivers will check with the referees pre-snap, right? But even still, and it doesn't happen a lot in NFL games, but once every two or three weekends, I see an offsides call in the NFL. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen to Patrick Mahomes. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to dive into the weekend lines and get rocking and rolling, plus a couple other news and notes that we have not gotten to yet. Keep it locked in here on Braves Country Radio. Brand new for the 2024 Braves Country Radio broadcast season. Along with pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play, the classic call, of Braves Country Baseball. We will bring you a live pregame show and postgame show. The phone lines wide open for you to call, react, or ask your questions along with the chat. That's Braves Country Today pregame, Braves Country Tonight postgame. We'll see you in 2024.
And the white line's getting longer, and the saddle's getting cold. Now I'm much too young to feel this damn old.
Welcome back.
All my cards are on the table, with no ace left in the hole. Now I'm much too young.
We are heading into, man, I'll tell you what, the football season, it never ceases to amaze me how fast it goes. You blink and it's gone, boys and girls. We are creeping up on Christmas, and your non-sports fans, they focus on that. What I focus on is, crap, now this is almost over. We just lost baseball season. College football season, for all intents and purposes, is dead. And now we're about to lose the NFL. So hold on for dear life. We've only got a few more weekends of this, and I'm definitely looking forward to all of it. I do love this part of it, though. This is fun. When the NFL calendar comes into play, and we are now getting Saturday games. Saturday games, boys and girls. We've got a triple header in the National Football League this weekend. And I, for one, am looking forward to that. You've got Bengals, Vikings at 1 o'clock, both teams 7-6, fighting for a playoff spot. So the NFL Network, by the way, all these games are on the NFL Network. They get a little fortunate that the first two games, actually all three games, have playoff relevancy. Vikings, Bengals, 1 o'clock. 4:30, was it last year or the year before? Remember the Vikings and the Colts played a Saturday afternoon game? I believe it was an early game too. And they had the incredible come-from-behind victory after the Colts blew a huge, huge lead. Is it 31 points, something like that? So Vikings, Bengals, that should be a fun one. We'll end up having to see who all plays for the Vikings, but I'm really starting to really enjoy Jake Browning. Jake Browning as a starting quarterback who is filled in for Joe Burrow has exceeded all expectations for me. So I'm looking forward to that game quite a bit. Jake Browning, you look at what he's done. Look at that game against Indianapolis. I really thought that the Colts were going to have a decent chance of winning that game. I felt like Cincy would pull it out because they were at home, but they were coming off of a very short week. Jake Browning went 18 of 24, 275, two touchdowns. He did have the one interception. More impressively, Cincinnati on the ground against a pretty good Colts rush defense. They went for 111 yards, 79 by Mixon, 25 by Chase Brown, who, by the way, keep an eye on that kid. That kid is lightning in a bottle. And Brown had three catches for 80 yards. So I'm looking forward to that game. The other game on the docket is Colts versus Steelers, 4:30 Eastern. And we are planning on bringing that to you on Braves Country Radio on Saturday. So, moving some things around, and we're looking forward to bringing you that game. Steelers, Colts. Now, right now, Vikings are 3.5-point dog in Cincinnati. The over-under is 38.5. Steelers, Colts. The Colts are a 2.5-point favorite at home, and we'll have to see who ends up playing quarterback this weekend for the Steelers as Pickett got banged up. Trubisky looked terrible. The over-under, to me, is almost the play that I'm looking at, 42.5. I kind of feel like if you want that, you better jump on it, because that is going to be a line that's going to continue to go south. And then the Saturday night game is a pretty fun one in its own right. Detroit at home against the Broncos. And who would have thought that was going to be a game of interest? But it really is. You look at the Broncos. So the three games, five of the teams that are playing this Saturday are 7-6 on the year. How about that? The other team, the Lions, are 9-4 and leading their division. So there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking on Saturday. And we've got another triple header the following weekend. If you look ahead, or I'm sorry, it's a double header the following weekend. The following weekend, you got Bengals Steelers and Bills Chargers, which ought to be a fun one. Man, Saints Rams is a Thursday night game. they're gonna have to hide the shoelaces and belts on Al Michaels. That is a brutal schedule. But anyways, let's see. Do they have a game the following weekend? That one would be a little tricky because it is... Yes, there's one game the following weekend on Saturday. Lions and Cowboys. And it's a little tricky because you got the college bowl games, which it ought to be interesting that day because Georgia's playing Florida State, but you're going to have opt-outs. I'm going to be interested to see who actually watches that game. Because now that college football committee has revealed themselves to be a fraud, I don't know if Georgia fans are going to care about this game. You just played for the national title 2 years in a row. Does anyone give a crap in Georgia country if you, Bulldog Nation, whatever the hell you want to call it, if you win a meaningless bowl game? And I know Florida State fans don't care about the game because they've already had one kid dip out in Johnny Wilson, and we're expecting more. So it's really going to be a meaningless affair. It's one of the reasons why the point spread is so high. People are like, man, why? You know, man, if you think this team ought to be in the playoffs, that they shouldn't be two touchdown underdogs. They're two touchdown underdogs because there's expecting to be a mass exodus. And I think we'll probably get that information in the next week or so. But we're expecting a mass exodus of a ton of Florida State players that won't play in that game. So it's literally going to be an absolute snore fest. It'll probably be a low-scoring game on both sides. I would think Georgia should win, but it doesn't matter if they win or they lose. It's going to be a meaningless game. So, but as far as the NFL is concerned, this weekend should be a fun one. You got the Vikings, Bengals, Steelers, Colts, Broncos, Lions, and that's on Saturday. Those games are Minnesota, Cincinnati is 1 o'clock, Steelers, Colts 4:30, and Broncos, Lions at 8:15. So that'll lead into obviously a full slate on the NFL slate on Sunday. The games you want to highlight there. You've got, strangely enough, Bucks Packers, 1 o'clock Sunday is actually a big game. It's very strange to think this, but it's a big game. Bucks come in 6-7, Packers 6-7. They're both fighting for a wild card. That game could very well decide who wins some kind of a wild card. Now, the Bucks are leading their division, but there's a long way to go, and we're three wide in the NFC South. So if you're a Falcons fan, we're pulling for the Packers to beat the Bucks. And, of course, Packers fans will know already if the Lions won or lost going into that game, but regardless, they're fighting for a wild card. Another game that, honestly, a few days ago, I would have said, well, there's no way in hell this game's going to matter. But Texans at Titans, the Titans don't really have much of a chance of making the playoffs, but they could make it uncomfortable for the teams they're going to face. They're at home against the Texans. It doesn't look like C.J. Stroud is going to play. By the way, Bucks-Packers, that line is Green Bay minus 3.5, the over-under 41.5. But Texans-Titans, the over-under is 37.5 because they're expecting Stroud to not make the game. And Tennessee is now a 2.5-point favorite. They were an underdog going into this. Now, the one thing I will say, you're dealing with a rookie quarterback in Levis, so be careful. And he's going to come off a short week. And he has looked much better when he's had a long time to prepare. We go back to his original game against the Falcons, where he was at home and he had several days to prepare. And then if you remember, right after that, they played a Thursday game, short time to prepare, looked terrible. I don't want to take anything away from him on what he has done, but if you just look at how he has performed, he's been a rookie. He did enough to beat Carolina. He didn't quite get it done at home against the Colts. He had an extra day to prepare on the road with Miami. And look, Miami choked that thing away. What Levis and the Titans did is, look, you can't take anything away from it. It was a great comeback. Huge comeback. But let's be honest. Miami had to give that game away. And now they're going to come on a short week, early kickoff at home against a division rival. It's going to be a tough, tough matchup against Houston. And this is the first of two games that they'll play against Houston in the next 3 weeks. Tennessee's at home against Houston and Seattle. Then they go on the road to Houston and finish it off against Jacksonville. The Texans, who are actually still in the playoff hunt, are going to try to find a way to get through this game. I would think it's probably going to be Davis Mills that's going to play. What is their schedule look like? They're at Tennessee, then they're at home against Cleveland and Tennessee, both winnable games. And then they are at the Colts, and that game very well could be for a wild card. Let's see how it all unfolds. I would think Jacksonville is going to hold on and find a way to win the AFC South. But at the same time I say that, I also think to myself, what the hell has Jacksonville done to really give me that much confidence? They've got a one-game lead in the division over the Colts and Texans. Their defense is a sieve. They constantly shoot their own foot in the red zone. And you look at their point differential, it's only 22 points, so they haven't really been that outstanding. But what does help them? They have a winning record in the conference, but they're also 4-1 in the AFC South. So that's better than the Colts, who are 3-2, and the Texans are a disaster at 1-2. And this is why the Titans have no real chance. They are 0-3 in their division. So even if they were to run the table, go 3-3, they're not going to have a better divisional record than Jacksonville. And the best that they could do would be to split the series with the Jaguars. And then it's going to come down to your divisional record. They're not going to have a better divisional record. So the only thing Tennessee's really doing is having fun playing spoiler. And it's also, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're enjoying watching Will Levis grow up in front of your eyes. I'll tell you what, that kid's fun to watch. He is fun to watch. He reminds me of a young Brett Favre. He's like a damn middle linebacker playing quarterback. In another big game, 1:00 kickoff, Miami is an 8.5-point favorite at home against the Jets. Buyer beware. I'd feel a lot better taking the Jets and the 8.5 points. Even though Miami's been so dominant, they're going to be coming off a short week. I don't think Tyreek Hill is going to play. If he does, he could easily get knocked out. They are saying now that Justin Jefferson has a good chance to play on Saturday, by the way. Talking about the Vikings, but we'll have to see, because even if he does come, even if he does play, what the hell are you going to get out of Justin Jefferson? He's missed most of the year. He comes back from an injury on the hamstring, and now all of a sudden, you know, he gets hit one time, and he's out because of a chest injury. And the Texans are walking wounded. They're not just going to probably be missing Stroud. And Tank Dell, they lost a couple of weeks ago. There's a good chance that Nico Collins isn't going to play. So that's why I'm really starting to think that the Titans might be the way to go on that game, maybe more of a money line. I don't know if I love giving up any points with that Tennessee team right now, but that's where I'm leaning. That Jets-Dolphins game, by the way, over under 39.5, that's another thing that I would like to be keeping an eye on too, because if the Dolphins don't have Tyreek Hill, and I just don't expect Zach Wilson to move the ball a whole hell of a lot, that over-under, 39.5, it sounds low because the Dolphins are at home and they're involved in the game, but I don't think it's low enough. I have got to take what Zach Wilson did on Sunday against the Texans in the second half and put that in a vacuum and say, you got to show it to me more than once before I'm going to fall in love with the Zach attack. Because that team is very well, could show up and just lay a total turd on the field, score 6 points and lose 20-6. And you're like, you took the over and you're like, how the hell am I ever going to get there? All right, let's take one last quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit the rest of the schedule, look at some of the lines and a couple other things we haven't hit up yet. We'll be back in a flash. Let's get it. You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia. Home of Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks, weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on The Key and YouTube.com at Braves Country. Brand new for the 2024 Braves Country radio broadcast season. Along with pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play, the classic call of Braves Country Baseball, we will bring you a live pregame show and postgame show, and the phone lines wide open for you to call, react, or ask your questions along with the chat. That's Braves Country Today pregame, Braves Country Tonight postgame. We'll see you in 2024.
I still can hear the jukebox softly playing, and the face I see each day belongs to you. Though there's not a single sound and there's nobody else around, well, that's just me thinking about things we used to do.
We used to do things about things.
Welcome back.
Lots of things.
Like a kiss in the dark.
Yeah, things.
We are rolling all the way to the top of the hour. And got a few more games to look at, a few more things to look at. And one of them, man, can you imagine this? If I would have told you a few years ago, Chiefs-Patriots would not mean a damn thing, or would be a snore fest, let's put it that way. I can't say that it doesn't mean a thing. It does mean something. Just doesn't mean anything for the Patriots. In fact, the Patriots fans hope they lose. The over-under in this game is 37.5. The Chiefs, 9-point favorites. I think the Chiefs will roll in this game. We'll do our picks against the spread. We'll do some tomorrow and do a few more as the week goes on. Get you all the way to that 12-pack by Friday. But I think the Chiefs, first of all, I do believe they're going to come out motivated and fired up. That's number one. I believe that they're going to come off of this game against the Bills and look good. If there's a game that I like a lot, it's this Chiefs going into New England. I'd like it a little more if it was a little later in the game, a little later in the day. But I still think Kansas City's going to go out there and roll. How could you not like the Chiefs to roll the Patriots in just an absolute disaster of a performance? I'm expecting. I don't care who the hell they put at quarterback at this point, the Patriots. I don't know if I love the over-under. You know, Kansas City has been kind of up and down as far as their offense goes all year long. I don't know if I like the over. The over-under is 37.5. I'd probably lean towards the under. I'm probably going to grab it and do some kind of a tease, but the Patriots, I just don't see how they put more than maybe 10 points on the board at the most, unless you get some kind of short field because of turnover or whatnot. And with that being said, what are we going to end up with the Chiefs, who their offense is not, I know everyone thinks of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, and you think of some explosive offense. If you watch Kansas City football this year, there's a reason why they're 8-5 and kind of middling around, and they're still going to be a threat to go to the Super Bowl, but they're not anywhere near as explosive, and his name's Tyreek Hill. They don't have that explosion anymore, and they're going to win this game, but I don't think they're going to win it going away as far as exploding onto the scoreboard. I think it's more the fact that they'll just methodically move the ball and beat the Patriots like a drum. And, you know, if you put me in a corner right now and say, what's the final score? I don't know, 23-7. It'll be something like that where they'll just continue. And here's the thing. They don't even know if Pacheco is going to play. So there is that. So I'm kind of leaning towards the under on that game. It's unbelievable how many unders have hit in the NFL this year. It didn't surprise me in the trend in college football because the change of the play clock. But the NFL, man, the offense, it's just been bad quarterback play. Speaking of bad quarterback play, how about the Giants and Saints squaring off at 1 o'clock on Fox? Man, if that's the game in your market, can you not just see yourself putting your feet up and eating a ham sandwich and going to sleep? The one cool thing about this game, Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito continues to be a New Jersey legend. What do they call him? Tommy Cutlets. Look, it's a fun story. I think it's a game. Look, this will always be the way you will mark the 2023 team of the Giants. We talk about this in 4 or 5 years. You'll always say, was that the Tommy DeVito team? Because if you look at it, there's no way in hell Tommy DeVito is going to be a long-term NFL starting quarterback. I don't believe. But he's got kind of that Gardner Minshew effect. He could bounce around in the league for a while and carve himself out a nice little career. And there's a reason why a lot of the fans love Tommy. He's fun. He's got cojones. He goes out there and plays, and he plays hard, and he does not back down. He is the exact polar opposite of what they've been seeing and what they've been watching in Zach Wilson the last few years. If Zach Wilson had half the heart and moxie of Tommy DeVito, Zach Wilson would be an MVP candidate in the NFL right now. A game that, once again, it's going to be hard to get this fired up. Now, if you're a Falcons fan, you're locked in. I will be watching it as I adopted them as my NFC team. Man, what was I thinking? This is just a brutal team to watch. But Desmond Ridder will be taking his Falcons into Charlotte, North Carolina. I feel like it's got some kind of a nickname. I don't know. The cat's meow. I have no idea what the Panthers stadium nickname is, but the Bank of America Stadium, and he's going to take on a 1-12 Panthers team that sucks. A Panthers team that the Falcons, if you want to win the division, there is no excuse for losing this game. Zero. Because here's the thing, Tampa Bay is going to finish the season this year against Carolina. Now, Atlanta won this game against Carolina 24-10 in Atlanta to start the season. That was a long time ago. So we're going to see what Carolina has in store for the Falcons this weekend. But the point is, Atlanta's got to win this game because you've got to assume that the Buccaneers are going to win the game against Carolina. Put aside the fact that the Bucs may lose this weekend in Green Bay. They may or may not win this game, but put that aside. They're going to beat Carolina. There's no way in hell Tampa Bay, if Tampa Bay has a playoff spot on the line at the end of the season, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to find a way to beat the Panthers, and that game will be in Carolina as well. So you've got to win this game if you're the Falcons, and you've got to put it away early. Don't let them hang around and let Bryce Young have some kind of moment that ends up defining his season. The 4 o'clock games, real quick, we'll hit them before we have to jam out of here. Commanders are at the Rams. This ought to be a bloodbath. Matthew Stafford, if you haven't been paying attention, has been absolutely on fire the past month. He's going to be going up against a terrible Washington secondary. They're 6.5-point favorites. Over-under's 49.5. It ought to be a bit of a shootout, but the Rams ought to win by a couple of touchdowns. 49ers are at the Cardinals. Speaking of bloodbath, 4:05 kickoff. I think the Niners are on a roll or on a mission now. And any chance you had to sneak up on them and catch them with their pants down, so to speak, that ship has sailed. They are now the number one seed in the NFC if the season ended today, because they will have the tiebreaker on both Dallas and Philadelphia, because they've beat them both head-to-head. So whoever wins the East, that will be your number one seed. If the 49ers win out, they're the one seed. And they got to keep their eye on the prize. It's incredibly important for the 49ers to play at home and not have to go across the country and play at Philly or have to go into Dallas, because that is a tricky place to play. Cowboys are at the Bills. That's the game of the week on Sunday. Cowboys are at Bills, 4:25 Eastern. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. 2.5-point favor is Buffalo at home. That ought to be a fun one. And the 8:20 kickoff Sunday night, it's got all the makings for a good game. I just don't know what the Jaguars are going to be able to do to stop Lamar Jackson and company. It's in Jacksonville. It's a Sunday night game. You're going to have all the vibes. It ought to be a fun one. We'll talk more about that one as well. Baltimore 3.5, the favorite on the road, over under 43.5. Have a great day, y'all. We will see you manana.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same back time, same back channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports.
September, something of a 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember. Something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please? Can I get another cigarette, please? Yeah, I know I live to regret it. Just give me another cigarette, please.
You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia.